Devaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskrityam. Naram Chaiva Narottamam. Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam. Tato Jaya Mudirae. Nashta Praeshu Abhadreshu. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Bhagavati Uttama Shloke. Vaktir Bhavati Naishtaki. We are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 66, entitled Paundrak, the False Vasudev, Text 19. Ataha Paundrakam Shaurir, Bobo Paundraka Yad Bhavan, Dutvakyena Mamaha, Tanyastranyut Shijamite. Ataha Paundrakam Shaurir. Bobo Paundraka Yad Bhavan. Dutavakyena Mamaha. Tanyastranyut Shijamite. Ataha Paundrakam Shaurir. Bobo Paundraka Yad Bhavan. Dutavakyena Mamaha. Tanyastranyutsajamite. Taha Paundrakam Shari. Bobo Paundraka Yad Bhavan. Dutavakyena Mamaha. Tanyastranya Sitagmite. Taha Paundrakam Shari. Obo Paundraka Yad Bhavan. Dutavakyena Mamaha. Tanyastranya Sajamite. Ataha Paundrakam Shauri. Bobo Paundraka Yad Bhavan. Dutavakyena Mamaha. Tanyastranyu Trujamite. Matajis. Atha. Then. Aha. Said. Paundrakam to Paundraka. Shauri, Lord Krishna. Bhobo Paundraka, my dear Paundraka. Yat, those which Bhavan, your good self, Duta, of the messenger, Vakyena, through the words, Mam, to me, Aha, spoke about, Tani, those, Astrani, weapons, Utsujamami, I am releasing, Te, unto you. Translation and purport by the disciples of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation. Lord Krishna then addressed Paundrak. My dear Paundrak, the very weapons you spoke of through your messenger, I now release unto you. Purport. Srila Prabhupada writes as follows in Krishna. At this time, Lord Krishna told Paundrak, Paundrak, you requested me to give up the symbols of Lord Vishnu, specifically my disc. Now I will give it to you. I will give it up to you. Be careful. You falsely declare yourself to be Vasudev, imitating myself. You falsely declare yourself to be Vasudev, imitating myself. Therefore, no one is a greater fool than you. From this statement of Krishna's, it is clear that any rascal who advertises himself as God is the greatest fool in human society. Om Ajnantimirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Gurum Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamsa Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Vita Shri Vishakan Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Panchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripasindubha Evacha Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shiva Sadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. So in this ongoing story of King Paundrak, because by now the story is very clear and you've heard this many times, but perhaps one point may have missed your attention. See, when we hear the story of Paundrak, it looks quite absurd. You know, somebody, you know, it's like someone who, it's like you come in front of a mountain and you will challenge and say, I'm going to lift a mountain. I would say that it's a physical impossibility. Something like that, where here a person comes and challenges Vasudev and says he's going to be king. But so we may get the impression that, you know, he's like a clown, you know, he's a buffoon. Actually, he was a very powerful king. And he was very intelligent. He controlled his kingdom. And he had, as we see, when Krishna goes to challenge him, accepts his challenge, he comes out with his two Akshavini divisions, and his friend comes out with three other Akshavini divisions. So he was able to control and motivate people. So perhaps you may get the impression that, you know, he was just like a eccentric nut who, you know, just somebody who comes on the road and says something and you may just laugh and go away. So when you see him in that light, then you may start recognizing that perhaps he was even more powerful than I am, and I'm also Paundrak. Not I may be, I am. We all are. And we need to see to what extent we are Paundraks in our life. So the Srila Prabhupada says that in today's Kali Yuga, this is a problem, that there are so many cheaters and jugglers and magicians, and it is not a surprise, it's not so surprising that we see so many jugglers and cheaters, because they're going to be there. It's a matter of law and of demand and supply. If there is a demand, then there will be supply. That you have people who want that, who want to be fooled, then they will always find lots of people. So somebody may claim to be God, somebody may claim to be doing various tricks and performing magic and also promising various things. There may be few, but and we need not focus our entire attention on them. But the point is that we get what we deserve, as it is said. And why do I say that? Because Krishna has given us common sense and intelligence, that everybody has been given that. So, as we have, as the basic principle of any knowledge is, that if you need to understand something, you need to go to the right source. As we have said so many times, that somebody wants to learn music, he will go to the right books and will make sure that he does not go to a carpenter to hear, to understand music, or to a physician. He has to find someone who knows music. Similarly, for any trait or any knowledge that you want, you would go to the right source, the right books, the right people, the right authority. But when it comes to spirituality, or people just want to, most of the times, especially in India, we feel, because we have, there is a certain spirituality, an adherence to religion, which also has many pluses, which makes people want to at least restrain themselves from some of the nefarious activities. But it also gives the impression that I know everything and I don't need to understand from any right authorities. And this is where the problem lies. So if we have the... So one can't say I was just fooled into it. Yeah, in some cases you may be led astray, but and maybe it is our karma to suffer also. But to a large extent, it is what we want. If you want immediate relief from suffering, that anxiety is so strong that we want to just have an immediate relief, then we will try to find any kind of solution. The example is given of a mirage. You know, a mirage is an illusion in the desert. If you are going, we are not too near the desert here, but if you go to a desert, and for miles and miles you don't see, for hundreds of miles sometimes, you don't see any sign of life, no water. And you may, and if you run out of water, you're desperate, you're really desperate, you just want any drop of water. And actually the mirage is, it's an illusion which, it gives you the impression that in the distance you can see, some sparkling fresh water, and you run towards it. And, you just take it, and before you know it, you're so hoping against hope, and then you realize you're eating hot sand. So it is like that if there is an illusion, and you chase after illusion, then you are likely to get disillusioned at the least. Srimad Bhagavatam, Sukhdev Goswami Maharaj says at one place that people want cheap blessings and they go after the wherever they can find, and it is, and he compares that with somebody who runs into a river, for relief from the heat, and does not discriminate about the level of water, and then he jumps in and breaks his head because it was very shallow. So when we are desperate, in a mirage analogy, the person who is desperate for water, really about to die of thirst, he loses his sense of discrimination. He cannot discriminate a bit between what is water, what is not. So when you are driven to that level, so therefore we have to see that we do not get driven to that level. And if we are so desperate to avoid misery and we want some relief from our present pain, from our suffering, and we want pleasure so desperately, so badly, then that illusion will likely affect our sense of discrimination between what we can, what is correct and what is not. So Therefore, the aspect of controlling our senses becomes important. If you see the reality today, that there are so many examples we can see, that where Prahlad Maharaj's words come true. Prahlad Maharaj says that if one does not take guidance from the spiritual authority, from Krishna or his representatives, from the bona fide authority, and when one is on the material speculative platform, then the solutions that you get to your problem are oftentimes worse than your problem. And this is where you don't have to go too far to see that we see that what we see as progress at one time, then again it throws up its own challenges. And we have to then find the solutions to that. For instance, this is the industrial age. The last couple of hundred years there's been rapid industrialization, but then it has also caused its problems of urban rural divide, not just physically but also socially, emotionally, mentally. It has also thrown up issues of pollution, of shortage of water, also thrown up psychologically also, you know, people who the earning levels are much higher in factories and urban settings. So because the consciousness would be that it's I, me and mine, what is good for me, and that is an extended family. It could be not just me, but it could be my family, it could be people whom I'm concerned with, it could be little, it could be maybe in one country. But then if we extend that further, then that becomes extremely dangerous. Similarly, even basic things like freedom, everybody cherishes freedom. We say liberty is the most important aspect. Nobody wants to be under captivity of any sort. But if it is misused, so there is nothing wrong with freedom. But it is a question of consciousness and how we are guided, how we use our freedom. If we misuse it to the extent that where, again, it only means that I am free to do what I want, nobody can tell me, I don't need any authority, I'm not subordinate to anyone, I'm the controller, then that becomes a problem. And you can see that manifest in so many ways. Just recently, the government, we are not looking at the approach of the government, but we are looking at the intent. The government's intent was to ban pornographic sites. And there was an uproar by people saying that you're affecting my liberty, we're adults, we can do what we want. So this is, then there's another example where maybe a year ago or a year and a half ago, because America also is going through, the world is going through an economic challenge, and in the US a couple of billionaires, very well-meaning billionaires, who they actually suggested that the billionaires somehow they're paying taxes lower than the general average. They pay between 15% and 20%. So they said that maybe 2% tax could be increased, and that could help the voluntarily we should actually increase 2%. And the uproar that came from the others, which is there's 700 billionaires there, that it was completely squashed. It was considered a very negative thing. Now, economic aspect is one thing. Whether it makes economic sense is not the point now. The point is that what is our intent? If we feel that if I am worth X and I cannot give it to others, let them earn on their own and let them come up. It's a free society and I have done my own hard work. I have come up my own way. I have made my own money. Let him do it. Why doesn't he do it? We then are saying that there is no place for God. There is no place for trying to understand how. We want to completely submerge the fact that we were given this opportunity, we came in this family, we were given this education, we got the circumstantial changes that happened in our life. Nothing. We just want to say that, and then we don't even want to look beyond. It's like an ostrich mentality, that we put our head in the sand when we see problems. And the problem is that we're all growing old and we're all going to leave this world. And then suddenly it is upon us. So when we leave this world, then at that time we have no answers. And then the remaining who are here, we do not think, we don't want to discuss that. The person is dead. You know, as soon as his body or her body is lying there, even if whatever relation we want to dispose it of, and then that's the end of it. You know, if some memories remain, a little bit of sentiment remains for a year or two, and then we are back to our life. We don't take the lessons. So the point is that accepting the fact that we have the presence of God is has to be a most important element of whatever we do. Oftentimes it can be in the forefront, oftentimes at the back of our mind, in whatever activities we do. Like Arjun, when he was fighting the war, he did it as a surrender to Krishna. He changed his opinion after he heard from Krishna, but he used it entirely for when he was under the guidance of Krishna. So, but at the same time, he did not reduce his prowess. You know, he put all his focus and all his effort into the skills and the gift that he was given, because he was extremely gifted. So there are so many people who have got tremendous gifts, you know, so much intellect so much talent, some capabilities are there, so many ways. The question is how we use it. We can also see that even the political system of democracy, certainly we would like to say that in theory we say we elect our own leaders. But again, it depends not only on what we think and what we want. If somebody promises us something and we just vote for that, and then we find that the person is oftentimes enriching himself but not doing anything, or maybe sincere but caught up in a system where they are only there for self-preservation, and their main purpose is to see that how they can be there now for the next 20-30 years, rather than what activities need to be done or to take unpopular decisions but the correct decisions. That's, then we can't blame anyone, because the system is such where it may say that all 1.2 billion people in India have the right to have a living in democracy, and maybe 700 million people will vote, but in practice what happens is that there will be always some who will sway the others, and the so-called intelligentsia or the in various aspects of society. But then so much depends on the leadership, we call them, but so much depends on their thinking, on their consciousness, on how they see, on their selflessness, to what extent they are willing to put others before them, to what extent they are not keen to promote themselves. There are so many aspects to it that the world is starving for seeing genuine leadership. But if we find that, then it does not matter really what kind of system is there. It is a matter of what kind of consciousness our leaders have. So that's the difference between the what we see in the historical ages, when Yudhishthira Maharaj was there, Amrish Maharaj, and they ruled the entire planet. But there, Lord Ram, his greatest example that we have of Ram Rajya, was because his entire anxiety was to see that every person in the all the subjects were happy, every person, and he took it upon himself personally. Not a single person should be unhappy. So that kind of ideals and objectives would be, of course, very difficult to understand. It's impossible to look at it in today's context. But at least if we see some aspects of it, then we can have some hope. But today, the society, and it's not just in India. We see in every aspect today there's so much of conflict. To a large extent, it is because two things. One, because each one thinks from their own point of view, either as individuals or as a community or as a race or as a caste or as a group. And the other thing is that the leadership is also in a self-preservation mode to a large extent. Or they may be having a certain strong objective, but it is only for a narrow group of people, a small group of people, not for the welfare of the whole. If it is for the welfare of the whole, then we would actually see the level of the spirit. Because only on a spiritual level, when we say spiritual, doesn't mean that one has to externally just show himself or herself to be, you know, falling in front of a deity. To acknowledge that the reality is that we are not this body, and that we are the soul, is the basic principle. And if we are all equal on the level of the soul, then we have to find out what is the purpose of the soul, what the soul wants, and what is the obligation of the soul to its creator, to the super soul. So this becomes, now irrespective of whether we are born in this country or that, background is this or that, gender is this or that, doesn't matter. Education, this or that, is absolutely of no relevance. We are all on the same level. And therefore, at one stroke, it becomes a united world. United Nations is an institution, but today we see there are more and more countries being created rather than because of the sectarian needs of the people. So therefore, whether you see democracy, whether you see liberty, or whether you see, so any aspect that we, which is, and these are worthy objectives, that we preserve our independence, we have, each person is unique, there's no doubt about it. But if it is not mixed with the, it's not combined with the right consciousness guidance, then the, it can be a very potent cocktail which could really be damaging actually. Even in terms of something basic like health, you see there's so much of advancement that has taken place, no doubt. People's lives, longevity has increased. Earlier people would live up to say 60 years, 50 or 55 years. When I was a student, I remember the average age in India for a male was about 55 or so, and for a female for about 52, I think. And now it is in the probably 72 or 74, so it has increased. In some countries it is up to 80 or 85, average age. But one has to, that is from one side. But the other side is that whether it is 50 or 70 or 80 or 90, we are going to go anyway. So we should not miss that point. So while we work towards it, we need to also know that that extra 10 or 15 years, then what? Secondly, that extension also, is it done with the selfless, completely selfless motives of seeing that how people's quality of life, there is a certain, it is not that it is devoid of that, there is a certain feeling that there is, that yes, they should, people will benefit. But there is also not escaping the fact that there is a commercial motive, and there are other motives which make people work. The health industry, the pharmaceutical industry itself, I mean, the profits in a year are over 8 lakh crores. Now, if it is done only to, and if it is only for a particular health purpose, the particular stream of medicine, and goes to the extent of completely considering other streams like, say, Ayurveda or homeopath or naturopath or acupuncture as not recognized. In many parts of the world, they don't recognize it. Then there's something wrong. That is obviously seen that it is not for the general health we are doing, but also because we see what can promote only one aspect of medicine. So while we shouldn't be against that, but on the other hand, we should be seeing that the purpose has to be the overall well-being of people, and in that, certainly everyone makes an effort, and there will be some who will be successful, some may not be so successful. And then also there are effects of that. I just read recently that in the US, for instance, there are 2 million people who are addicted to painkillers. Now, you know, painkillers are necessary, and some diseases it becomes extremely painful. But if you go to the extent of becoming addicted, then that creates another problem. 2 million is a very large number. And the same article also said that, 80% of heroin addicts, you know, heroin is a drug which is one of the most prominent and dangerous drugs drug addicts use. So 80% of drug addicts who were hooked on heroin, in this survey had said that initially they started with painkillers, or at some point in time they were also using a lot of painkillers. So this becomes a potentially dangerous thing that we don't know when we cross that limit. So therefore, if we talk of advancement, we have to talk of advancement with the right consciousness to see the purpose is what? The purpose is that how can we promote prevention as much as cure? How many people? I've gone through a heart condition about 10 years ago, and I remember when I was, it happened almost very suddenly, in the sense that it wasn't a very serious thing, but then I was operated and I just got myself checked and then found that I had some blocks, so I was asked that you should go for a angioplasty on the spot. And I said, I'll leave it to you. But after that, for the next few years, I didn't know that I would have to take some medicines for the rest of my life now, just to keep the blood thin, etc. But I never got any advice that I should lose weight, that I should exercise more, that I should have less stress. Nobody told this. It was only later, 2-3 years later, a friend of a devotee here who took me to another another cardiologist who actually is, though he's a cardiologist, he follows another stream, but means he basically on prevention, and he has 100% success. So, because common sense. So, the goal has to be to improve health. The goal is not to promote a certain medicine or to, at the expense of everything. At a certain level, yes, you would need to develop some medicines, but what is the larger goal? So each of these, the point is that each of these advancements, whether it is modern factories, whether it is health improvements, whether it is our liberty that we ensure, but if it is if it is misused, then it's not a blessing. So when Sukhdev Maharaj says that people are after cheap blessings, what do we mean by cheap blessings? Now, cheap blessings could be, a benefit. Blessings could be, it may seem to be a benefit because we are asking for it. But he considers cheap blessings as those which are, let's say, you go and go to a Babaji or go to Sannyasi, go to God, go to demigods. Then you ask for a thing that, you know, please let me get through my BCom examination or my PhD, or please let me, you know, let my investment in this work well, or let my business venture work well, let me get a very nice husband for my daughter, things like that. We, first of all, going to the Lord is always necessary. Ideal is not to go with any desire. So even if you go with some desires, at least let's not stop going. But we should recognize that the Shastras would consider this, that if you're asking for, and if you don't get, then you go to somebody else till you get somebody who promises that. Oftentimes that is the case. And if you do get, then you think that that is the only way. You put your faith only in that situation, that because of this, so you could become fatalist, and you will expect to get in the same manner. And we have our own acharyas. I mean, Srila Prabhupada, there was an instance when once he was walking and the one person came running after him, Swamiji, Swamiji, please give me your blessings. Prabhupada kept walking and this person just went on and he was falling at him, at his feet, and saying that, Swamiji, please, please. He kept badgering him for 10 minutes till Prabhupada reached, and then he sat down at a place, and then he fell at his feet and said, Swamiji, please give me your blessings. So Prabhupada looked at him and said very seriously, he said, I give you my blessings that all your material life is finished. So it was such a shock to him, you know, he fell back and he said, no, Swamiji, I need, no, give me some other blessings. So he said, no, this is the only blessings I need. So of course Prabhupada did not staying out of his compassion. What he meant is, your material life means your attachment to material things, and which means that our strong desire to only look at the material objects and go after that. So he said it out of genuine compassion. So a genuine sadhu would not be looking at our external condition and saying that because we are from this caste or this background or this education level or this material background, certain class of society, etc. Everybody is in the same boat. Everybody has the same opportunity. And a genuine sadhu is one who gives every opportunity, every effort to bring us closer to Krishna, to try to help us being detached from our material life. Whatever we have got, we should do the best with our full effort, with unrestrained effort, but with the right consciousness. It may be even, and it doesn't mean that if someone is given a lot means and that externally we value it accordingly, and somebody who just has no material benefit, but nevertheless uses his or her guidance, understanding fully in her character or his character, in his development of the children, and in various services that they can do, that is equally on the same level. So services are never looked at by the quantum. Services are always looked at with the consciousness we do. Even Prabhupada's Guru Maharaj was Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and his guru was Gaur Keshwadas Babaji Maharaj. Now Gaur Keshwadas Babaji Maharaj was a genuine Babaji who actually shunned, people kept coming to him for blessings, and he deliberately was staying, at one time he was staying under a boat on the banks of the Ganges at a place where people came to pass the stool and urine. So obviously people who just come there, and the idea was that they would not bother him because it was such an awful place to be, and he was staying there so that people would not bother him. That was his purpose. Still one person kept coming and saying, Babaji Maharaj, please give me my blessing, you know, my daughter is getting married and I want this, I want that. So then Gaur Keshwadas Babaji Maharaj said that I bless you that you stay with me for the rest of your life and do bhajans. So he ran away and he never came back again. Even then people used to keep coming to him. Then finally he went, actually moved, and he went and stayed in a latrine. Even then people used to come, so then he kept the latrine door also locked. So they considered it a pathetic situation to accept or to give blessings, either way, or to this kind of blessings. Their purpose was to give spiritual understanding and knowledge by which we can improve our lot no matter what our situation is. If it is our lot to academically excel and to materially excel, if that is our karma and that is our effort, we will do it. But most important, which is missing, is what is our thinking, consciousness, understanding. And if we see it from a spiritual point of view, then we will see everyone as equal. We will not discriminate. Like everyone sitting here, there is no discrimination as to who comes from which state and which background and so on. Same way, that it has absolutely no meaning, because we understand that we are here. All of us actually are meant to eventually, whatever years we have, 70, 80, 90, 30, 100, finally we are going. So how can we improve this quality while we are doing our occupation duty, and in such a way that we don't consider that somebody is greater than someone else. No, someone is more fortunate than someone, yes. Someone is more grateful because they have been given, and someone has more responsibility. But not that someone is greater because they have a certain background. So we, with all these aspects that we may see in the modern society, it can be a blessing, it may not be a blessing. And you know, even eventually if you take, if you have been given, say, a healthy body, now definitely we would want to improve our health. But if somebody is not given a healthy body, now one can look at it this way, that if your consciousness is right, then with a healthy body you have more opportunity to do nefarious activities. Because if you are incapacitated or sick, you limitations are much more. So you know, if you are given the, so everything depends on what we do. For instance, the body can be used for, it can be used, there is no limit to what we can do, because today there is such a strong body consciousness that the people are willing to pay for anything. I mean, there are billions of dollars of industry which are only focused on improving our health. So improving health is one thing, but if it is really to enhance our looks and make money on that, then our consciousness becomes only focused on that. For instance, recently there, a few days ago, there was an article which mentioned that of the top 30 superstars, who are earning all over the world, seven of them were Indians, and these seven Indian Bollywood superstars, each of them was earning between last June 2014 to June 2015, in 1 year, earnings were between 100 to 250 crores, between 15 to 35 million dollars. So if it is their karma to get that, they will get it. But if it is setting an example for people that that is the only way, to, that is that he is my God, then we are not different than Paundrak. That we are looking at that, that the way he smiles, the way she talks, the way, you know, then you know, everything revolves around that. There is no value to character. So if there is a dealing between God and our activities, then this this challenge becomes very very difficult. So for a person, for every living entity, our goal has to be how we can try to minimize our needs and maximize our effort to help others with whatever means we have, and how we can do it in the spirit of not considering ourselves superior, which is very difficult, because this is this the single biggest challenge that we have is to get away from the fact that I am doing something. And if you have been given more attributes, then it becomes very difficult. That is why when we do it in association of devotees and under a certain prescription of sadhana bhakti or certain religious guidelines, then that helps us within the spiritual environment. It helps us to slowly develop that feeling how we could try to dovetail our propensities in the interests of others. So every activity that we do for the community or for the nation, for others, for the family, others, is good. It is good because it helps us to do for others. But if it is not linked with the understanding of spiritual understanding, then the danger is that that could only be, finally at the end of it, it is meant for me only. I mean, I should be benefited the most. We will not be able to tolerate any difficulties, any pain, any challenges that come. And we will do anything to try to solve our problem by hook or by crook. So to accept difficulties becomes a big challenge. And especially for those who have been given a lot in various attributes, for them it becomes very difficult to take back, to suffer setbacks. We have examples, King Indra's examples quite often comes that in the Govardhan Leela story also, and how he couldn't, he was almost like a spoiled child. He is actually the lord of the demigods, and he got so much involved in his own prowess that momentarily he forgot that he is actually on behalf of the Lord. And actually when the service, the worship to him was stopped, he reacted in such a violent way, he was willing to kill. You know, he invoked the Samvartaka clouds, which are so powerful that there were 7 days of continuous rain of such a level, such magnitude, that the raindrops were like, you know, almost like pillars. Each drop was like a pillar. We cannot envisage the kind of... And it is only when the Lord lifted the Govardhan hill and got all the residents of Vrindavan to come under that they were saved. So this could be from a person who is a very favorable person, a very intelligent person, a person whom is clearly one to be respected, somebody who is actually much, much higher than us in all levels, and yet it could happen to him. So it's a lesson that what is to, what to speak of us. We have no attributes compared to what Lord Indra has. And of course he begged forgiveness later. That was his greatness also. But it is a very pointed lesson to us that this overpowering illusory energy, the Maya, is so strong that makes us feel that we are the doer, that we can be swept aside even if we think. So it's not like if we have been doing it becomes a habit and after 5 or 10 years or 15 years that we are now comfortable. So it is like, because it's not an autopilot. You cannot put this, because this is a, it is a matter of applying our mind, heart and thoughts and words constantly. You cannot for a moment deviate from that. So you may act, you can do some actions which are, you know, automated, and sometimes it just happens almost ritualistically. But our thinking cannot be that. Our thinking, and the thinking influences action. So if our thinking gets deviated, and the mind is something which is extremely fragile, and gets, it can slowly get influenced by so many things, saying that you know, it could be saying that, well, I've spent so much time chanting and I'm coming to the temple for 10, 15 years, 20 years, but I'm now finding that I don't get any benefit, and see, this person has not been coming and I see so much, that person is prospering so much, that I think I should try something else. So these kind of thoughts can also come. So then we, without understanding from the Shastra or from the previous Acharyas or from the present Guru, if we come to our own conclusions, then we can see that there's a sign of Maya which is actually taking us away from the right path. And when that danger happens, then slowly, slowly, we don't even realize it. Subtle things are more dangerous than gross things. See, if something were to hit us as a calamity, it is a terrible thing. But that's something which is staring to our eyes, we understand. But when something creeps in and, you know, if you see someone coming to attack you, it is a frightening feeling, but at least you know what it is. But worse is that if somebody comes and becomes your friend and takes your confidence and everything, and then slowly, finally you find out that he's your worst enemy and takes everything from you, that is more disastrous, because you didn't recognize, you didn't plan for it, because you didn't know. So therefore, our understanding, our approach entirely is based on how we were to think. So who is the real guru is a good question. And again, there are many descriptions, of course, many ways to describe it, but one very nice definition or one nice description is, Srila Prabhupada says, is a real guru is one who actually increases our attachment to Krishna, decreases our attachment to material life, and gives us the knowledge to increase our devotional service. Because ultimately devotional service will encompass everything. So this is the objective for us, how we go ahead. And he also gives a very nice analogy to understand, explain that. Like, for instance, you have wood. Now wood actually has fire in it, but the potential of fire is in the wood. But the wood by itself, you cannot see the fire, you don't, unless you kindle it. But once you kindle it, then it starts burning. So he compares the wood is like the conditioned soul, and the fire is really the spiritual master. So when you kindle it, then when the fire is lit, then that means it enhances our, the fire actually not only destroys all the anarthas, physically, literally it may destroy many of the dirty things, but internally, it just like the spiritual master gives us a knowledge, it will destroy our anarthas, our weaknesses, our wrong habits, if we were sincerely follow. So this becomes a very important aspect of our life, that we should not deviate from that. But it is very difficult, because who is, you know, there's very, if we are linking it to someone who gives us material objects and who actually impresses us on a material level, he may even be knowing a lot of shlokas, that's having a lot of intellectual prowess, and knows many of the spiritual literatures at the back of his hand. But it is not easy to judge unless we actually compare it with Shastra and compare it with the previous Acharyas. And one very good example of a material guru with a material nature is given in the Shastra, just to illustrate how dangerous it can be for us to understand the difference, is Shukracharya. Shukracharya was actually the guru of the demons. And we may think that, we were talking about present day cheetahs, and somebody will create some objects and mesmerize. Some siddhis may be there and they may pretend to be God. But Shukracharya could actually create cities. He could create entire cities by his power. And when he, because he was the guru of the demons, he was the guru of Bali Maharaj. Bali Maharaj, who's actually also a Mahajan, but he is born in the family of demons. He is a grandson of Prahlad Maharaj. And he, this is at the setting when after the manthan, the amrit has come, and the Lord has come in the form of Mohini Murti to save the demigods, because the demigods were almost wiped out practically and they were desperate. So they appealed to the Lord to save them from the demons because of the power of the demons. So Mohini Murti, that's Lord Vishnu, comes and gives the Amrit to the demigods. The demigods become very powerful. And with that power they come and they start annihilating the demons. So at that time, Shukracharya actually... that happens, and then eventually, of course, the demigods. I'm taking it later. Shukracharya, the point I'm making is when Shukracharya, under his guidance, that was the stage when the demons were actually overpowering the demigods, and the demigods actually had to run. So there were different times when the demigods, when Mohini Murti came in, they became much stronger. But when, at the time when the demons were overpowering the demigods, such was the power of Shukracharya, because he was the force behind, that when Indra asked his guru as to now what we should do, then he said, I think you better run. There's nothing you can do about it. And then, finally when Vamandev comes, Lord Vishnu comes as Vamandev to save the demigods, and he comes and asks for 3 steps of land. And Bali Maharaj is a very honorable king, so though he is the king of the demons, but he has he had his own principles, and he since he's a Mahajan, he also had a strong belief in the Lord. So while he had Shukracharya as his guru, Shukracharya was someone who was so sharp that he could understand that this Vamandev, who came as a dwarf, was actually Vishnu. So when Vamandev came and asked Bali Maharaj for three steps of land, and that was also at the urging of Bali Maharaj. Bali Maharaj said, "Please, I can give you anything as charity. I can give you planets, I can give you cities, I can... take you to this place, whatever you want I can give." But then we only asked for 3 steps. So at that time, the Shukracharya actually warned Bali Maharaj, because Bali Maharaj was about to sanctify it and give the blessing, because he thought this is nothing. In fact, he chided Vamandev as to why you're asking for only 3 things, and why you're asking for only these 3 steps of land. I can give so much more. So Shukracharya actually stops Bali Maharaj and says, you don't recognize him, because this Vamandev is just a small dwarf, young boy, I'm short, but he is actually Vishnu, and he's actually come to ask from you, and he's going to ask you with 2 steps he will cover the entire universe, and he's going to ask. And he will prove you wrong, and he'll destroy you, he'll take everything away from you, and you'll be left with nothing. All this Shukracharya could predict, and eventually that is exactly what happened, because Vamandev took away everything, but it was actually to enhance Bali Maharaj's greatness, because Bali Maharaj showed his total surrender. But here we are seeing from Shukracharya's point of view that look at his power. He was so powerful. And yes, when at the time when the demigods got the Amrit, and the sequence is like this, that actually when the Mohini Murti came with the Amrit and gave the Amrit to the demigods, they became very powerful. They defeated they in fact killed Bali Maharaj. They killed Bali Maharaj, they killed his generals. They were actually dead. And Shukracharya then created a potion with his mantras, and he then took the bodies and dipped them into the potion, which immediately brought back life. Not only that, they became so powerful and invincible, and then they went to fight the demigods, and then the demigods were at the receiving end, and that's when Brihaspati told Indra that you just run, you can't do anything. Then they appealed to the Lord, and Vamandev came. So Shukracharya's powers were such, and yet his was only a material vision. But see the limits. We cannot compare anyone today with him. But see the limits to which they can go. So eventually for us to decipher whether it is material or spiritual becomes very difficult and confusing unless we have guidance and unless we have faith in the right source of spiritual knowledge. So and that right, that if it's genuine faith, we will come to, if we really have a strong desire to seek not for ourselves but what is best for us, and then we will actually, Paramatma in our heart will guide us, and we will come to he will guide us to the right guru, and in fact guru only will find us. Also in the story of Kalia, we see that it is again a parallel, because in today's world we find it very difficult to if you have success, to not be arrogant becomes very difficult. And Kalia was, the serpent, was one who was very powerful, very successful. He wanted to cover the entire lake which he was presiding over by himself, and he had so much poison that not even the birds who were flying overhead could survive. And even if they were thousands of feet above in the air, just because they came over the lake, they would die. So he made his preserve, and he became the master of his lake, and said nobody can step in, and let alone dip the, go into the water, but not even come even near the lake. And because Krishna wanted to teach a lesson, there are many lessons actually which come out of this, but Krishna, in his pastime, he dives into the water, and then as just a young boy, and everybody, his parents and his friends and all except Balram, they practically faint because they are so scared that he will be swallowed up. And Krishna pretends, he takes his time to really show his invincibility, but then eventually when he dances on Kalia's head, hoods, thousand hoods, and Kalia was so powerful, but yet, you know, he had started vomiting, apart from his poison, blood and everything, because he was helpless in front of Krishna. So, but Krishna saved him only because of the prayers of the Nagapatnis. His Kalia's wives were actually devotees, and they prayed. So the prayer of a Vaishnav for us is very powerful. So if we have a sincere heart, we should pray for others. And we don't know how much, or in fact we should know in fact that we are today, whatever benefits we are getting is probably because of the prayers of other devotees. We are protected because of the prayers of other sincere souls who have actually prayed for us causelessly. Not for any reason, but just because, just to protect our spiritual life and to help us to continue onto this path. So Nagapatni's prayers actually saved Kalia, and then Kalia was spared. He was not killed. But the story demonstrates that not only the prayers of the Vaishnavas are powerful, but also that that Kalia, from you know, he had so many fangs and so many hoods and such power. Eventually, they were all subdued. So we also have our own coils. You know, in the same way, we may have this attribute, that attribute, this, that. So if we were to arrogantly use it against others or against the Lord, against out of envy, then we run the risk also of being completely subdued. So it is better that we ourselves were to give, to surrender to the Lord. And surrender doesn't mean giving up everything. This, surrender means that we give up our attachment and our sense of proprietorship. We do externally what we can, but we do it in following the certain practices which can help us to be in the right environment, right mood. So this approach is not a dogmatic, fanatic approach. The approach has to be out of deep conviction. It has to be out of understanding, out of debate, out of reading, and out of fully applying it only when we are completely convinced. But to make the effort, to make that effort of understanding this can only be us. Nobody can force us. As they say, you can take the horse to the water, but you can't make the horse drink water. That only depends on the horse. So similarly, we have to take this as a signal. If you have been given an opportunity to come, we may say that, well, the world is seeing differently in so many aspects. I mean, when I go out on the road and when I'm here and I may act in a certain way, but everyone else is acting in a different way. That is not material. I think we have to go according to what we have been taught. And because the behavior of a devotee is the criterion for all of behaviors. So we may not be a devotee. We are aspiring to be a devotee. But we have characters of various devotees in front of us who have gurus, acharyas, there are many great personalities. They are their behavior becomes the benchmark, is the criterion for all other behaviors. Actually, Madhvacharya said that he was asked, how do you judge a pure devotee? So he said that you judge a pure devotee by the sound vibration of his mouth and the steadfastness of his devotional service. Two things. Sound vibration of his mouth and steadfastness of his devotional service. And that we can see over day in and day out, week in and week out, month in and month out, year in and year out, decade in and decade out. And we see that as a person who is constantly striving to live entirely for others and give whatever Krishna consciousness that we can accept to us, then we should try to emulate that person and follow him. So then our behavior also can become a pattern. Because everybody has a role model. Role models are necessary and will always be there. But it's a matter of whom you select as a role model. If somebody, just because he's worth 200 crores or 500 crores, that doesn't automatically become a role model. Or somebody who has extreme good looks, is blessed with good looks, or somebody who has a very sharp mind and has got 5 inventions to his credit, doesn't automatically become a role model. You can appreciate. His attributes, God-given attributes. We can see how glorious it is. Just like we see the nature and we see how glorious the nature is and how the sun rises. Nobody has to wake up the sun or nobody has to have any anxiety that supposing the sun doesn't come tomorrow, what will happen? The sun, how the planets are moving on in orbit, how from a seed, a human being is actually growing. So we can just marvel at that and then see that there's a link, that there is somebody who is a creator. Same way, if somebody has been given attributes which are, we don't become envious of that. If it motivates us to and inspires us to increase our effort to develop it in our lives, we should do it. But we can at least appreciate if it does have nothing to do with us. We may see somebody who is given an extremely, got special circumstances. We say that, well, his personal life or her personal life will be between him and Krishna, but we can understand and we can appreciate that how Krishna has given that particular attribute. And especially for ISKCON devotees, there is a very strong message because we don't count for anything. None of us count for anything. We're just a straw in the wind. But we represent, if people think that they're from the Hare Krishnas, and how we behave and how we talk reflects on Srila Prabhupada, reflects on Lord Chaitanya's movement, ultimately reflects on Krishna. But immediately it reflects on the, as part of ISKCON, if we were to act in wrong ways, misbehave, or act in a very arrogant way, or in a fanatic way, then thinking that we are superior to others, and because I'm chanting so many rounds, because I come on Sunday to the temple, because I do this, because I do that, I know so many verses. If you think like that, then we are going to be losing whatever credits we have, because these are actually aspects which we need to be grateful for, not something which we should be claiming to be ours. So the circumstances by which has made us come here and got in touch with devotees and somehow connected to Radha Gopinath ji or Radha Ras Bihari or Radha Giridhari or any other temple or any other any aspect of God, is something which we should be so grateful that it should make us always motivated to dive deeper and see how we can quietly in our own way improve our lives. Thereby we can improve others. And automatically then we see everyone, we don't see people as enemies and friends. If people are harming us, we can certainly minimize. We have to have the intelligence and the effort to try to protect ourselves. We can't be foolish enough to say, okay, this body is not mine, let him do what he wants. No. But at the same time, we don't harm others. We don't spend our thoughts and mind and everything, you know, think that how I can destroy this person. Because he or she will have his karma, we have our karma. But so we have to do what we need to do, but how we do it, if we are spending sleepless nights over that and scheming and doing this, then even our value of chanting and reading books and all would be reduced to a large extent. So we have to be very careful. Radharaman Temple, Srivatsa Goswami, once he mentioned a very nice statement. He said that the integrity, sincerity and faithfulness of the devotees, of ISKCON's devotees, he was referring to devotees like us, I mean, who are in the movement. He said the steadfast, the faithfulness, integrity and devotion and sincerity of the devotees is the only proof, and it is sufficient proof of the authenticity of ISKCON. That means ISKCON's authenticity is the proof of it is the behavior of devotees, which is reflected by sincerity, faithfulness, and integrity. So there is, it's not a matter of pride. Of course, it's a matter of pride when we see others doing well, but it is more a matter of grabbing an opportunity we've been given. We've been given this, like we have so many, sometimes you get an opportunity in your occupation and you take it. But this is a matter of a life situation. So when we've been given this opportunity, we should take it and know that Krishna is a person. So we have a special relationship with him. We have a link with Krishna on a one-to-one basis. Our prayers are actually a link to Krishna on a one-to-one basis. When we are praying, when we are chanting, when we are doing kirtan, it is a collective connection to Krishna. But when we are doing japa, it is a personal internal link directly. Every living entity, every human being has a link with the Lord. And that's that quiet hour that we are, He's listening to us, we are talking to Him, we are expressing ourselves. So to the extent that we are able to do it in the right time, right mood, right consciousness, to that extent our communication improves. Just like if you have to go to a public speaking event, you have to give a class, or if you have to give a lecture to an auditorium, you are going to prepare yourself well and you think so many things and what to say, how to start and what to end. But, you know, how to speak also, right? Because you want to capture the audience attention. Now here Krishna is waiting. He is the Supreme Master and he is waiting. He is your entire audience. So if we were to see that way, that he is the audience, he is actually listening and he's more keen for us to come to him than we are willing to go to him. So if that, then even our communication to him through our chanting would improve. But the challenge is that today we are facing a very depersonalized world where with progress the personal connections become less. You know, even our gadgets, for instance, technology is advanced and you can misuse it and you can use it well. But if you were to use it as your own improvement of your entertainment, then you again are extolling your own personal happiness and you are not concerned with the others. And what I see in my life the last 30-40 years, I see with the increase of improvement in gadgets and technology, actually it is making people more self-centered because they are happy within themselves. There is you know, with their own blackberries. Actually they say that now there is what they call a blackberry prayer. Blackberry prayer is you know, when you are praying you are always sitting down and praying. So even in board meetings or in other meetings, people are looking down, but they're praying, they're looking at their messages, or they're actually playing games, video games. So it becomes just consumers. So I'm not saying we don't have time for that, but we have to be alert that it actually, it's very likely that it just sucks us into that to such an extent that we send messages to people who are only in the next room. We don't even walk across and talk to them. So it has health benefits because means if we were to minimize it, our health will improve. If we start walking again, which people have forgotten, you know, our consciousness, our emotions, you know, people are. You are not concerned with the outside world. Today, a lot of times you see that people are not bothered about, they would rather be smart than intelligent. They'd like to be, as we say in English, chalak. Chalaki, I mean, you may be able to extol, you know what to repeat and how to improve your marks in your exams. That is only one aspect of it. But real intelligence to actually understand and observe what is happening in society and the world at large, and also to decipher this, that while everything is going on, good or bad, things are happening nicely for me, I'm having problems, start thinking, to introspect. So that needs certain amount of awareness, and which is becomes less because you are on a very impersonal thing. And in the whole environment is such. In many countries, when the social security net is there, which is there to help the people who don't have, who are deprived, you know, means they're poor, underprivileged, so the nation supports them. So they have a social security number. So you are like categorized. So it's like that. So then you become a number, you become a statistic. People who now, when we hear of, 40, 50 million abortions a year, you think that 40, 50 children are being murdered. But nobody thinks that way because they consider removal of tissue. They will only say it is, they don't even consider it as, so it's become highly impersonal, depersonalized. So everything becomes, so the convenience, it becomes inconvenient to have God in the presence because if without Him, you know, you can carry on what you want. If you see even the science fiction movies or you see, you know, the popular ones like Spider-Man, Batman and Superman and or the good, you see that good prevails over evil, but there is no God. It's only the human being who is the master of his destiny and who can improve the situation, or it may be an alien force that can, but you will not bring in. So it is as if that eventually you have the powers to overcome your own problem. So this mentality gives us the, it becomes inconvenient to have someone like God who you don't see, you don't know who he is, and why bring someone else because he has his own message and it may be not particularly convenient for my approach. So it's gradually come to a level where first used to write a large G, capital G. Now I find, rarely you find the word God, but they also, they now put small G. So, you know, it's minimizing the presence of God. It makes you feel that actually when you bring the topic of God, it means that this person is, he's not a very practical person. He's a very impractical person. He just talks about God. So, we don't talk about God in our occupations. Fine, we have to work and we do what we have to do and we must do the best we can. But this is why we talk of Krishna consciousness. That means we are conscious of the fact that we live this life ultimately for one major responsibility, which is as a human being and what we can do. And externally we have so many responsibilities, we should see that because of the presence of the Lord, our external responsibilities of being a son or a father or a husband or a wife or an employee or an employer, whatever, or a citizen, those responsibilities also get enhanced and we can do it better. So there is a connection. You cannot distance itself because if you do it, you may think you're doing well, but your activities also are eventually, because even charity can be in the mode of ignorance. Charity can be in the mode of passion. Because you can do charity, but you are enhancing only your reputation. You may be wanting people to know that you're doing such. So, or you may be just wanting to address it, address the bodily needs, thinking that even if you don't have your personal motivation, but your own thinking is that let me just see if we can, but if you actually trying at the same time to see how their internal consciousness changes in some way, then That can only come when we have given attention to this. So my point is that the warning is that we have to be careful that in this world of depersonalization, we should be not forget that Krishna is a person, and then each living entity is a person. So our connection is on a personal level, and therefore feelings matter, how we talk, the sensitivities of others, consideration for others becomes very crucial. And if we, and that becomes easy if we were to try to follow from the point of view of the Lord. If He's seeing everyone as one family, then we also try and see as one family. There's a variety in the family, and there are room for differences. You may also not be very comfortable with A, B or C, but you can respect people. Because, you know, you have your own weaknesses, someone has his own, each one has their own style, her style, his style. Those are not material. They're not so important. You know, naturally, in a class of 40, you may have 5 very close friends, but doesn't mean that 35 are enemies. In school, we don't see that way. You know? Then you may have a little quarrels here and there, but by and large, you have because children have a certain innocence which makes them. So they'll gravitate towards those whom they're comfortable with, but the remaining, then at least they have a friendship, a certain level of friendship. Which may not be intimate, but which is healthy and respectful. So that's what we should need, and that health gets enhanced if we were to see it as one overall purpose, not from the point of view of Pandrak, but from the point of view of Krishna. So we'll end here. If there's any, I don't think we have any time for any questions. Any mic here? We will have 5 minutes for questions.
Hari Bol for this lecture. Okay, I just wanted to know that we are like I-centric. Most of the people are I-me, mine, the centric. But we should be Krishna-centric. So like, and because of Maya, that is the conditioned soul, which we get attracted to. So how can we be far from that, and we can be more to Krishna-centric nature? Like,
so there is a certain process that we follow. One is that we follow certain regulative principles. We avoid certain things which are detrimental to our, which are which can harm us. We avoid sinful activities, we avoid certain things to eat or to drink, etc. And at the same time, we try to follow process of coming closer. So starting is really Shravanam. Shravanam, Kirtanam, as I said. Shravanam is the first service that we're doing. Actually, at hearing the words of the Lord, Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, either reading it directly or hearing the messages is the first step. Because that then gives us the faith. The little faith that is there becomes stronger, and then we become more convinced about. And if we have doubts, we can check this. So then we systematically follow the process, and if we come to a stage where we can actually start chanting the names of the Lord, that also helps us. And then at the same time, we do externally what we have to do. But so we don't have to, you know, now think today in 24 hours how many times I thought of Krishna. If you are following this process, automatically you will be having a lot of thoughts, and then when you go to work, you don't have to worry that, well, I went to office at 9:30 or I went to work in my shop and I came back at 7 and I never thought of Krishna once. Don't worry. If you are following this practice in the morning, and if you are following the practice in the evening, and at the same time, yes, there is Krishna's presence is there, because you automatically will be influenced by, in your behavior, by how you talk. You will be conscious of the fact that if you have, let's say hypothetically, a very hot temper, you will definitely feel that, well, today I lost my temper, and maybe I've been losing my temper 5 times a week. You will come to a stage where it will come down to 2x a week. And again, sometimes you may need to be angry deliberately, because it is necessary, because somebody is cheating you or somebody is not doing. I'm not talking of those issues, but sometimes it may be just because you are provoked and you just have an outburst on your child or wife or mother or anyone. So as an example, I'm saying that if you have some weakness, then you will start trying to minimize it. So a process is perfect. The question is whether we sincerely try to follow it, and then just give it time, because you know we are told in the Shastra we have come into this human life after so many years, so it doesn't mean that over after how many lifetimes in fact, so it doesn't mean that it will change overnight. So we have to be patient and follow the practice, but then we have to follow it sincerely and attentively. So basically avoiding certain things, chanting the names, and as much as possible that we are hearing the philosophy. And people, what they do is that they hear it at home also, means they have when they are going to work also, they are hearing in the train or in whatever mode of transport. I mean, that depends on what, wherever they get the opportunities. Then weekends are there, then the services that one can do, one starts getting into it. So then that gives us the that we are then doing for others rather than for ourselves. And service doesn't only mean in the temple. Service means at home, how we live with our husband or wife. That is the first service that we can do, that we can implement what we are doing. Then with our children and with our relatives, family members, we should be seeing from that point of view that we behave much better with them. So all this is actually service. And here, Granth Raj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Hare Krishna, there are a few announcements. Announcement.